Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is May 1st, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. This Sunday, many of you will join me at Two Bunch Palm Resort in Palm Springs. We're going to have lunch with Catherine. It's joint with the wonderful folks from Growing Organic magazine. We're about 50-50, and I'm really looking forward to it. I arrived in Palm Springs 2 days ago after driving across from the Ozarks, Oklahoma, through Texas and West Texas, across New Mexico into Arizona, and then over to Palm Springs. And what a drive that was. We'll talk about it when we get to food prices. Our theme tonight is It's All Connected. I look at the world as a very dynamic living system, and that's because all things are interconnected, particularly in this world where the financial system and the communication systems really integrate and cause things to be very dynamic. Nature's always been that way. I love talking with Joseph Farrell, who's the interview this week. It's his quarterly participation on the Solaria Report. We're watching a world that's changing and it's integrating. And so there are all sorts of opportunities to appreciate the connections between things. And the connections are there, and we talk about them in this interview. I hope you enjoy it. Money and markets. I want to step back and talk about the economy, because we just reviewed the first quarter reports. Essentially, the U.S. gross domestic product for Q1 collapsed, is the best word to say. The official report was that growth had slowed to 0.1%. That's 0.1% GDP growth. That's quite a drop from last year. The consensus expected was much more positive. Why? I don't understand. Once you piled Obamacare on top of everything else, it's hard to see how you were going to get any kind of growth. The fact that the number was technically positive is really as a result of sort of reverse heroics by the statisticians at the Commerce Department. And of course, the Fed continues to engage in quantitative easing. We saw more taper this week, but still the Fed is pumping a tremendous amount of money into the economy. And that's part of what the problem is. We're getting inflation on the expense side. So real growth is negative. Let's look at some of the particulars. Total fixed income was down almost 3%, equipment spending down 5.5%, residential investment down almost 6%, net trade exports minus imports was down. Declining inventories, there'd been a fair amount of inventory buildup in last year. Bill King of the King Report argues that the real gauge for the U.S. economy is real median income. I agree. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported the U.S. wages and compensation have increased 1.7% for the last year, which is less than the rate of inflation. And that's contributing to the fact that the household savings rate is down, and it remains well, well below historical long term. So the message is the growth in consumer spending that we're seeing is simply increased household costs for non-discretionary services, healthcare, housing, utilities, financial services, from rising interest rates. And so, food prices, healthcare, energy prices are all socking the consumer. And the squeeze that is all part of the slow burn that we've talked about many times is on. One of the contributions to that, of course, is Obamacare. We're watching healthcare expenses really rise towards, now it's a record $1.85 trillion but it's headed towards a $2 trillion level. So here's the bottom line. What we saw in the first quarter, in real terms, real median income down, the real GDP down. So we're watching a contracting economy. And it's not just in the U.S. Part of the picture was collapsing exports, and that's reflecting a weakened global economy. Now, the big question is, are the tensions or the geopolitical tensions weakening the economy, or are those tensions a result of a weakening economy and everybody scrambling for cash flows? Clearly, the tensions between the G7 and G20 have been growing and are growing still more. And one of the examples of that, of course, is the Russian-Ukraine situation. We see many reports of the Russian planes flying the U.S. ships, and basically jamming their systems in a way that's very bad news for the United States, because it basically says the U.S. is not invincible, and that's bad news for the dollar, particularly bad news when you impair the functionality of the U.S. Navy. Big tensions between China and Japan, and of course, reform in China. Good for China, but, you know, more tension in the global economy. And of course, we see part of the G7 versus G20 tensions is the global pushback from the Snowden revelation. So all of that makes for a part of what's slowing the economy down. But of course, we have sort of the fundamental nature of peak everything that we've put off with more printing of money and more debt, but now the real stuff is catching up in the real prices. I think the thing that's causing the most pain is rising food prices. It's quite extraordinary. But we also have rising housing costs and rents, rising energy prices, and of course, rising energy prices increases the cost of food and the cost of maintaining a house. Unemployment continues to be high and appears to be rising from the most recent claims this week. Wages falling, consumer, as I said, median income is up, but less than inflation, so in real terms, we're really seeing fall. The drought. I mentioned I drove from the Ozarks down into Texas across to here to Palm Springs. The drought is very bad, and it's very bad on the psychology of the people in the Southwest. It's turning up as part of the problem with the food prices. I don't believe we've begun to see the rise in food prices that the drought can cause. So I'm going to hammer on that today. I want you to think a lot about how you're going to adjust to that. Obamacare has still not hit home yet, but it's clearly having an impact, whether people are experiencing rising insurance costs or they've been thrown off their plan and are scrambling. Finally, the disasters are really having an accumulated effect. When I came through Arkansas, they got hit by bad tornadoes, and we see, you know, a town really destroyed. People are looking around at all the different disasters, tornadoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, on and on and on. And, you know, there's just real concern, not just about could a disaster happen here, but the aftermath. We're essentially on our own. And I would say all of these things are adding up to something which I think is a greater impact on the economy than any one of them, and that is this sort of general state of dread. And when you feel that, you know that something's terribly wrong, but you can't put your finger on it. It's not any particular one thing. It means you can't assess risk, and so you pull in your horns and pull back. Now, it's interesting, we're watching still with this downturn in the underlying economy, we continue to watch a strong or relatively strong equity markets. One of the big contributors is social media and cyberspace. What you're watching with the internet is a very effective next round of shifting income out of Main Street, out of small business, out of households, and into corporate America. Part of it is it's re-engineering jobs through automation, and part of it is it's just grabbing market share. I talked recently about the Yelp stories. I was trying to find a local restaurant in Nashville. I was headed to Nashville a couple weeks ago for dinner, and of the first five local restaurants I called, five had gone out of business recently. And I finally found a sixth, but what I found was all sorts of national restaurant chains. I had two stories up on the blog about Yelp, allegations about Yelp sort of targeting local and small business. I tend to believe it. And as I talked about it in the annual wrap-up and the first quarter review, all of this is part of sort of re-engineering revenues online, but it's steering more income into companies and into online sales out of Main Street. Now, in the meantime, companies over the last year have paid over $1 trillion in dividends and stock buybacks. So, and not surprisingly, we see Americans now hold the largest percentage of their financial assets in securities, stocks, corporate bonds, and mutual funds. A recent Gallup poll up on the blog last week shows that Americans now prefer stocks and precious metals ties for 24%, of preferred investment, with real estate still leading at 30%. Real estate prices are up around the country, even though housing sales are dropping off. So this all has important ramifications for the election. We've seen a lot of Jeb Clinton versus Hillary Clinton trial balloons over the last couple weeks. As I said before, we're watching candidates around the country, particularly Cuomo and Christie on the East Coast, knocked out by the sort of juggernaut of what I think is coming on the election. Interestingly enough, the polls show that a lot of people really don't know who Jeb Bush is. They know who Jeb Bush's family is, but they really don't know Jeb Bush. So Clinton is obviously much more well-known. But I think it's a long way to the elections. And if you look at what's going on in the economy, it's very bad news for both parties. James Carville said it was all about jobs, jobs, jobs. And I think that's what we're going to see coming into the election. Republicans would like to make it about Obamacare. They have a very good story there. I don't think it's going to work. The general population is much more interested in issues of income. Housing is going to be important because the housing market has really been struggling. And we now see the U.S. home ownership rate fall to a 19-year low. Housing is looked now as much more of a consumption and a potential liability. You know, young people have watched what happened to their parents and the people, the homeowners around them, and they don't necessarily see it as anywhere near as attractive an investment. Of course, loaded down with student loans doesn't mean they're going to be ready to take on a lot of debt soon. Gary North had an interesting piece. It's up on the blog. I think it's called something like, is Facebook going to replace Obama? And he really talks about what happens when general disgust reaches a level where people walk away from the system. And the polls he describes in terms of our general population within North America with the U.S. government is very significant. It's worth taking a look at. Let's talk about the markets. What's interesting, it's everything's been chopping sideways this year. The S&P 500 and bonds are up about 1 to 2% for the year, still relatively flat, although the U.S. equity markets continue to look strong. Gold has been coming down. It was up as high as 15% for the year since January 1, and now it's down around 7% and looks soft and falling. Emerging markets still slightly down. At various times, they've kind of perked up but haven't really shown anything yet. And the strongest sectors are food, commodities, and bonds, surprisingly, despite our expectation that the long-term turn in the bond market is coming. Whether the developed markets or emerging equity markets are going to turn up or not remains to be seen or going to show any kind of strength. The reality is, if we're all going to fight with each other, you know, that's going to be good for some equities, but generally bad for the markets in total. As I said before, the drought is very significant in the Southwest United States and out in California. Beware what this can do to food prices. They're up a lot already. It can get much worse. And if you haven't, it's time to get radical about a food budget and how you make sure you arrange really high-quality fresh food at affordable prices for you. It's really worth creating edible landscapes. We did a Salieri report several years ago with Eric Tonsmeyer, who's one of the real leaders in edible landscapes. He's got a great set of books on it, and he's working on a new book. So think in terms of, you know, how you can turn your trees and your landscape into something that produces fruit and vegetables and food for you, because the price rises are going to continue for the future indefinitely. So just keep thinking about ways to do that. Some stories on the blog I want to point out. I've been writing a series, and I just put up part 4 called Promoting Women. I recommend it to you because there is definitely a game going on promoting women, and it pays to understand sort of the real issues and the political issues behind it. So you get the deeper story on that. And that's something that you're going to continue to see. And it's, if you look at all the people who stole $40 trillion during the financial coup d'etat, now that they've had the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Bill Gateses of this world help them steal it, they're going to hide behind the skirts of a lot of very charming women. Another post, let's talk about sell in May and go away. If you look at the performance of the S&P 500 since the beginning of the index, it's absolutely astonishing. In fact, most of the gains occur in equities between November and May, and essentially, 5% or less occur between May and November. And so it's almost like our seasons are risk on and risk off, and precious metals tends to be the same. And so in May, everybody goes to the beach, and it's risk off until they're back and focused in October and have a new federal budget. So take a look at it, because if you're investor managing your assets, I think it's a very important phenomenon to understand. And there are years which are exceptions, so who knows what could happen this year. The U.S. aims to defuse tension over control of the internet is another story. If you look at the domain shift, it's very interesting. If you drill down, what you find is the people in control are now a combination of U.S. government agencies and defense contractors with European government agencies and defense contractors. So what we're seeing is a shift of the internet very much to a G7 kind of control. Our hero this week, wonderful inventor Ma Yi, is inventor of a 3D house printer. Story up on the blog, giant Chinese 3D printer builds 10 houses in just one day. Thank you to the many subscribers who sent us that story. They knew I would find that intriguing. It's a reminder, when I came through Texas, I stopped in Ballinger to visit with a wonderful business there, a new startup, which is making gray water systems. And as I drive around through California and from Texas to California, what I keep seeing is hundreds of thousands of homes that all need gray water systems, because we're not going to have edible landscapes, let alone landscapes, if we don't start converting our gray water to provide the water to sort of irrigate them, particularly in areas of drought. But it's a reminder that it's going to be entrepreneurs who start businesses that address the challenges before them, and thousands of entrepreneurs starting thousands of real businesses to really solve the problems can do it. Anyway, so a special thank you to Ma Yi and all the subscribers who sent me that story. Ask Catherine a lot of questions this week. From one, in conversations with friends tonight, the following came up. It is about a cure for cancer. The funding was shut down. The product is apparently not patentable. Why are we not surprised it was shut down? If this seems viable, I would think it would be a great candidate for crowdfunding. I put the link up on the blog. It's a group of doctors at the University of Alberta who've come up with something that looks very intriguing. A post on the subscriber feedback that I wanted to read, I think it's very important because it was in response to the story or the Solari report that I did with John on mind control towards a more coherent mind. Let me just read it. Some relatives that I trust completely relate a story. I do not know the main character in the story, however. She is late 80s in age, financially secure, lives alone, and no one thinks of her as having entered any type of senility. She recently took her vehicle to the dealership for service. She remembers going there and remembers that while there, a salesman approached her about purchasing a new vehicle. Then she remembers being at home and realized at some point she had purchased a new vehicle. She says she had no thought of buying one, didn't want one, and didn't understand how she purchased one. She has no idea how it happened and doesn't remember it happening. She was, of course, very embarrassed about the incident and doubted herself. But she returned to the dealer after realizing that she had not only purchased it, but paid over the MRSP, that must be the book price for it. Therefore, they promised her a brand new 14 model as soon as they came out to make up for the price she paid. Apparently, she let it go after this. Man, when I heard the story, I just heard Catherine's audio on mind control, and of course, it's what I immediately thought had happened to her. I have no idea, really, if this is what happened, but it would perfectly explain it. And someone like this lady would be the perfect target, I suppose. What a bummer. We need to all be careful and look out for each other. That is very true. It would not surprise me whatsoever if this story is true. And it would not surprise me if the salesman in question used entrainment technology or hypnotic speech or a variety of different techniques. And when I was investigating these kinds of technologies and weaponry in the 1990s, one of the things I saw the late 90s was we saw patterns in Section 8 housing where elderly would be targeted, I believe, with electromagnetic weaponry, and their mind and health would suddenly deteriorate. They'd need to be moved from Section 8 to assisted living, so the government subsidy that a landlord would get would more than double. And so it was a way of increasing your profitability on a variety of people. All you had to do was get them to go from being healthy to inexplicably sick in a way that was very invisible and, you know, their doctor wouldn't understand. So, you know, these kinds of technologies are out there. They're spreading. And it is extremely, one of the reasons I beat the drum. You need to care who you're doing business with. You need to care who you're doing business with. And if you go to do business with strangers, you need to not be alone, or you need to be very, very discerning, because these things are happening. Imagine going into a hospital and have this technology used to try and persuade you to have elective surgery that you didn't really need. Oh, gruesome. Next question. U.S. troops in Poland, can war be far behind? What would it take to stop this mindless march to destruction? Is there anything we can do to head off this crisis? The subscriber is referring to, of course, to the Ukraine. I think one of the things we've seen is that Congress and the leadership is much more focused on doing what they need to do to generate corporate earnings. And I think, if there's one thing you can do in addition to pray, you can look at the stocks and investments you own that are involved in what's going on in the Ukraine and make it clear up the corporate ladder and through your proxy votes and your communication with investor relations that this is not what you want to see in the world. So I think we're going to have to go to the private side if we really want to have an impact. Of course, it is an election year. And if you're in a congressional district with somebody who really does care what their constituents think, and there are many good congressmen, I believe, definitely make yourself heard, because the competition, the elections this year are going to be quite real, despite the Supreme Court allowing an endless amount of corporate money to flow in. Next question. What do you think will be the four public consumption reason given for the implanted money chip? My guess, identity theft. Well, as we can see, what they're trying to do is to make the implanted money microchip a voluntary deal. That's what the wearables are about. That's to a certain extent what the smartphone's about. There is one theory which I tend to believe, which is the some of the nanoparticles in the chemtrails basically spray in a way that create an organic chip in everyone. So I suspect if you look at the technology, we've already been chipped, so to speak, and in a much more organic way. So I don't really think they need an additional implanted money microchip if everybody's calling or using a smartphone or wearing wearables. What's interesting is the failure of the Nike bracelet is a real indication that consumers are saying no. You know, they don't want to pay money to wear chips. I think we're still far away from any kind of enforced implanted money microchip. I think there's a lot to be done with smartphones and building the global network for digital currencies. So I think we're many, many years away. And if you look at what they're doing with voluntary technology, I think they can go a very, very long way with the consumer embracing the technology. With all the talk about secret space program, what do you think about Laura Eisenhower, the granddaughter of President Eisenhower, especially her talk at the Italy disclosure event? I haven't watched it. I've watched a little bit of one of her interviews, and basically, if you look at my background or knowledge, it just wasn't particularly useful. So I don't think I've ever posted any of her stuff. I'll take a look at the Italy disclosure event. Then, in addition, what do you think of Karen Hudis, the whistleblower at the World Bank? I've watched a couple of her interviews, and I don't think she's reliable, so I don't post her, and I don't recommend her work. But I haven't spent a lot of time studying it. I would just basically say I don't think it's useful. Next question. I don't ever remember a time when the economic news has been so conflicting. Consumer confidence is up. No, it's down. The number of single-family home sales has been increasing, but wait, they're actually been decreasing now for several months. What's your opinion on why we're hearing such conflicting economic reports? Part of it is you're looking at the sort of government management of statistics and various folks' efforts to spin things positive or negative. The other reason, less sort of understood, is tremendous divergence. So we're seeing a giant sucking sound out of households and out of small business into the corporate economy. The corporate economy is growing strong. You have certain sections of the corporate economy, the 3.0, which are growing very strong, and then others which are dying. If you drive around the country, the areas that are strong, so San Francisco, Silicon Valley, where I'm headed shortly, on Sunday is going gangbusters. Housing prices up 25% over the last year. Lots of money flowing in. What's interesting, the IPO market seems to be cooling a little bit, but one of the reasons is companies with so much cash are buying companies up before they can go public. So, again, the thing to remember is both, yes, the government is managing the slow burn squeeze and playing games with the statistics. But the other thing is we're watching tremendous, tremendous divergence. A great comment, a question about ETFs and mutual funds, which I'm going to have Chuck Gibson answer next week on our equity overview. Greetings, Catherine. Thank you so much for making yourself available. Recent publication of Death of Money is a great read. I haven't read it. I'll check it out. I did, however, hear you mention that one thing is missed by many in the financial industry is that black budget manipulation and how it can delay such a crisis as the mortgage situation, how we deal with the dollar being killed via spending and derivative markets. Were Iceland and Cyprus test cases for the coming events, U.S., such as currency collapse, Fed Reserve dollar, and social outbreaks? I do think Iceland and Cyprus were prototypes, but I wouldn't assume that they were prototypes for what's going to happen in the U.S. I think the U.S. is a different fact pattern. The one thing I always warn and really warn people about is Iceland has now, is going through a constitutional rewrite and a virtual currency, which is totally transparent to the government. What may be a great idea in Iceland is a dreadful idea here. So if somebody tries to say, oh, Iceland solved the problem, use this, don't buy it. The worst thing that we could have in this country and the thing the leadership would most love is a constitutional convention and opening up the convention to a rewrite. Do not do it. Do not do it. No, 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 no. So beware Iceland solutions brought into the United States. I do have to say one thing that's very irritating to me about the Cyprus situation. Whenever I start to talk about bail-ins, all the people who are so critical of the regulators when they do bailouts start talking about bail-ins like they're a conspiracy. Well, you know, if you don't do a bailout, then you have to do a bail-in. I mean, it's, you know, so I think we can't assume that every action of all the possible actions are all bad. I, for one, don't think of bail-ins as necessarily bad as all. I like the idea of accountable financial system and of institutions being accountable for their performance and the people who invest in those institutions being accountable for their performance. That's how markets work. The gentleman on the precious metals report who'd asked me for depositories asked me a question about the bank. I think he means the depositories. If you go back and check out the transcript in the precious metals report, we listed the names and contact information for the two depositories we recommended in the East Coast area. Also some questions about specific banks. I don't review or recommend specific banks on the Solari report, but if you go to our bank intimate page, I have a link to one of the services that gives ratings on not credit unions, but banks. And also I have an article on how to find a good local bank. It'll kind of step you through the process. So check that out. See if it's helpful. Let's go to the movies. I chose Dangerous Beauty, which is a very entertaining movie. If you're ready for a break, it's entertaining and it's hopeful. It's a movie about Veronica Franco, who was a poet and courtesan in the 1500s in Venice. and became a hero, sort of saved Venice on more than one occasion, and then was dragged in front of the Inquisition and managed to outwit them. When an economy turns down, you start to see scapegoating and witch hunting. I've lived through, being a target, and in fact, at one point was accused of being a witch. It was very interesting and inspired me to go back and study the history of major witch hunts, why they happen, how they happen. One of the important things to understand is when we get these kind of downturns, we have a tendency to kill off the most innovative people, who are exactly the people we need to get us out of the downturn we're in. So beware scapegoating and witch hunting. We've seen an enormous amount of sort of negative attack and meanness on the internet. It's kind of scary. And it, you know, I almost wonder if things continue to deteriorate economically and we continue to experience extraction of, you know, one of the things we can never do is sort of turn on each other. That's not the way to, that's not the way to solve the problems before us, but it's a little bit scary. And it's one of the reasons I've been exploring some of the divide and conquer tactics in this latest series on promoting women. And so check it out on the blog. Our interview is, again, this is the quarterly interview with Joseph Farrell, and it's what I wanted to do, and this is anticipating many of the changes we're watching in the financial system. The financial system is a deep, deep system. When somebody comes to me and says, I want to talk about how we should re-engineer the currency, I say, well, let's talk about the governance system, who's governing things and how do they govern? And they say, well, I don't know. And I said, well, you can't change the currency system. Currency system is only one part of the governance system, and you can't change the currency system without understanding what the governance system is, how it works, and how that fits in. Because if you change a currency system, you know, a particular system can be terrible or wonderful depending on the governance system that it works with. It's a little bit like, you know, thinking that you can change your kitchen pipes without understanding how the whole plumbing system works. It's just not possible. So changing the financial system is a very deep change and very intertwined with the governance system. Joseph has several books on the financial, the banking and money system. One is Babylon Banksters, then The Financial Vipers of Venice, and the new one that you can now pre-order, Thrice Great Hermetica and the Janus Age. And they're really deep explorations of the financial system and the financial model. And he and I go at it. Of course, you know, all things are connected through time and space, and Joseph has a very big brain. So we go everywhere from physics and the how physics drives the planets and economy to the global leadership, in the ancient world through Venice and into the current sort of merger of the Nazi leadership with the Anglo-American alliance after World War II, and that we've explored, and then, you know, and bring it down to today and the development of global digital currencies. Anyway, it's a very long, we spent about 2 hours. I said we could go as long as we want, so we did. But if you're interested in where the financial system is going, it's a lot of deep background on the financial system and what's involved in reinvention. Okay, that's it for today. Coming up next week, we have the Equity Report, our quarterly report with Chuck Gibson, my partner at C-Lane. May 15th, Enric Pogrom of the Red Ice Creations joins me to talk about the Secret Space Program Conference, why we're doing it, why we think it's so important. And then May 22nd, a wonderful favorite of mine, Lawrence Gonzalez, author of Deep Survival, one of my favorite books of all time. He's got a new book, will be joining us on the Solari Report, and we'll be talking about the issues of success in a changing world. So until next week with Chuck Gibson on May 8th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.